Thank you, Nancy. That was beautiful. Some of you may have known my husband, Al Hart. He was pastor of the Avon Lake Church for 29 years, retired, and was one of the co-founders of the Elders of Jazz. Some of you may have heard of the Elders of Jazz. In fact, when I preached this sermon at John Knox, the Elders of Jazz were my backup group. Al went into the hospital in September, late September of last year, and he was supposed to preach on October 10th, but needless to say, never did make it. When he died on February 15th, one of his last wishes was that his last sermon would be preached. So I made arrangements at John Knox to preach that last sermon, and just happened to be sitting next to John Fancher at a workshop we had at our church, and noted that you were looking for preachers during his sabbatical. So I said, well, if you're really in desperate need, I would be happy to preach Al's sermon. Well, those of you who know John, he immediately got out his book and booked me at that time. So I am delighted to be here and delighted to preach my husband's last sermon for you. So thank you for being here. Before I begin, I must confess that I have made a couple of minor changes to his sermon. Otherwise, it is just as he has written it. But I think he would have approved of the changes I made. And also, I want to say that when I say I, it is not I who is speaking, it is Al who is speaking, so you don't get confused. I'm sure most of you do not know Jeff Nichols, who was the business director of the John Knox Church and a really good guy. However, if you don't like this sermon, blame it on Jeff. Even though you don't know him, you can blame him for it. It's really his fault that I'm preaching it. Normally, I like to preach sermons that make folks feel good. A bit of a challenge, I hope, but still feel-good sermons. This may not be one of those, and if you don't like it, blame Jeff. You see, he taught a Lenten Nights course a year ago last spring that was a challenge to many of us in the class. Some didn't like it much, and a few said so. But it was thought-provoking class, and it inspired me to preach this sermon. As I said, blame it on Jeff. The story that was our New Testament lesson this morning is a familiar one. If you read the New Testament, one of the things you notice is the fact that Jesus was constantly criticized for the company he kept, for eating and drinking with sinners. But one of the things worth noting is that Jesus' critics, mostly the Pharisees and other religious leaders, seem to object more to his actions rather than to his words. Jesus has done a lot of teaching, and some of it the Pharisees hadn't liked it at all. But words were just words, and the Pharisees evidently could put up with a lot of verbal teaching. After all, there were lots of teachers in those days, and they didn't really have to be taken seriously. But what angered the religious leaders were the actions of Jesus, the actions that emphasized and dramatized his words. He was not content with just talking about loving one's neighbor. He did it. He dramatized his love by his actions. And that was going a bit too far. Yes, it was the acts of Jesus which got him into trouble, but it was also those same acts which gave his words clear, compelling power. That's often true. Actions bring trouble, but actions also speak louder than words and can often more effectively demonstrate the Christian message, the good news of Jesus Christ. Take the area of what we used to call race relations. Obviously, we haven't made too much progress in that area. It's easy to utter pious platitudes about racial justice, and such words don't cause much disturbance. But deeds of social justice, actions of racial justice, that's really living dangerously. A former pastor of the church I served for many years once put his words about racial justice into action. He demonstrated and picketed in a way that he felt was necessary. He was criticized for it by members and non-members alike. The non-members said to the members, "Can't you control your pastor?" The question asked of the disciples about Jesus was the same. Why does your Jesus eat and drink with sinners? In effect, they were asking the disciples, "Why can't you keep your teacher under control? Why can't you make him stay within decent limits?" As one commentator has put it, Christ would not stay behind the sanctified fences of accepted usage and tradition. He was always leaping over them into forbidden territory. It was upsetting to their status quo and hence unendurable. The fact of the matter is that it's hard to control the uncontrollable Christ. As I thought about this sermon, I remembered a satirical but very Christian musical called For Heaven's Sake. And the idea for this specific part of the musical came from the writings of C.S. Lewis. Lewis put it this way: imagine yourself as a living house. God comes in to rebuild that house. At first, perhaps you can understand what he's doing. He is getting the drains right and stopping the leaks in the roof and so on. You knew that those jobs needed doing, and so you are not surprised. But he starts knocking the house about in a way that hurts abominably and does not seem to make sense. What on earth is he up to? The explanation is that he is building quite a different house from the one you thought of. Throwing on a new wing here, putting on an extra floor there, running up towers, making courtyards. You thought you were going to be made into a decent little cottage, but he is building a palace. He intends to come and live in it by himself. Helen Cromer, in her satire, puts it this way. She calls it the repair job. Listen to Al's daughter, Susan, speak as the tenant with distress, complaining to the audience, and Martin, her boyfriend, provides the chorus.
I asked Gunner to do some repair, and he put me the whole place over. My bungalow was modest, with a simple one-floor plan, but all its quirks and foibles satisfied this simple man. I knew the drains were leaking, the gutters rusted through, the shingles had been warping, and the paint was peeling too. I know it needed fixing, and I thought I could afford some sort of small repair work. Then he went overboard. He kept on saying what could be and how the place would look. He said he'd take me over, and now he ain't took.
Because he's making us over. He's making us over. Nothing's the same since that house wrecker came.
I had a little workroom that was cozy, dark, and warm. He stabbed the shabby flooring, and out the termites swarmed. The demolition crew came in and built a tower there. It isn't cozy anymore. There's windows everywhere. And heights can make me dizzy, but the thing that's worst of all, against the whole dark countryside, my trophies look so small. And I was fond of my old den, as fond as of the devil. My gosh, do you suppose that's why he's building me split level?
He's making us over. He's making us over. Nothing's the same since that house wrecker came.
He's dug some new foundations, and he's adding several floors. The maintenance is frightful, and he's multiplied my chores. I put the question to him. Just how soon would he be through? Why, he said, I never finish. Once I go to work on you. He built a sort of skylight with a sunlit glassy dome. I said, you come and live here. It's not what I call home. We had an awful hassle when he said that was his plan, to make a sort of castle from this bungalowy man.
He's making us over. He's making us over. Nothing's the same since that house wreck.
That's just it, you see. Christ is uncontrollable. We try to control him, sometimes by not taking him seriously, but it doesn't work. Once you've given him an inch, he takes a mile. So be very careful. Don't invite Christ into your life unless you're prepared for the consequences. You see, Christ changes people, but often not in the way that they thought they'd be changed. And of course, that can be a bit upsetting. In fact, even as Jesus upset those tables of the money changers in the temple, down through the ages, he has been upsetting things and ideas and people, even his followers. During the evangelical revival in England in the 18th century, many church people complained because Christ was not kept locked up in the churches, but was out in the open fields and street corners, associating with all sorts of activists and miners and working folk and sinners. Jesus was uncontrollable in the missionary movement in the 19th century. Many churches wanted to have nothing to do with this movement, but Jesus was there, working, changing lives all over the world. And Jesus is still uncontrollable today. When he gets into the hearts and minds of men and women, there's no telling what might happen. And things are happening. Followers of Jesus Christ, Christians, are doing things. Things are happening in this church. Lives are being changed. People are serving Christ in mission projects throughout the world and right here in Cleveland. Followers of Christ are doing things, not just at church on Sunday morning, but out in the world on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. Think of someone you know who knows Jesus Christ and follows Jesus Christ and puts his or her faith into action in all sorts of areas of life. That's what the uncontrollable Christ wants, uncontrollable Christians. And of course, there are still some people who say, as they've been saying since the Old Testament prophets, let the church mind its own business. Stick to the gospel. Don't meddle in politics or racial justice or hunger issues or peacemaking. In effect, they're saying, control Christ. Keep him locked up in a box called the church. But Christ will not be limited or controlled that way, nor should those of us who call ourselves his followers. Listen, don't let the world around you squeeze you into its own mold, but let God remold your minds from within. Radical? Yes, that's from Romans 12, the Phillips translation. Something for us to think about. Are we controlled by the world or by the uncontrollable Christ? Do we take Christ for granted or do we take Christ seriously? Andrew Blackwood some years ago wrote a powerful poem which sums it up so well. Jesus, what have you done to us? Listen. Jesus, what have you done to us? We wanted a pet kitten and you turned into a tiger. We like you the way you were. Why couldn't you leave us alone? We wanted you to show up when we wanted you, to make us feel good. We wanted a pretty church for weddings and baptisms and funerals. We wanted the cute Easter bunny hopping around the lawn. We thought, religion is good for kids. Now all of a sudden you've turned against us. We wanted peace, and you've brought us a sword. Things were going along all right. Then you got interested in the poor people. Now they're strutting around like they're going to inherit the earth. Now all of a sudden you tell us to love our enemies. Do you know what will happen if we do? They'll nail our hide to the wall. And what will we do then? Keep on praying for them? We liked you when you were a little baby, gentle and meek and mild, cooing in your cradle. All those nice shepherds and angels, we felt just awful about King Herod. Look at all we did for you. We made a national holiday in your honor. We built big industries around it. Christmas cards, toy machine guns for the kiddies, all those fancy gift-wrapped whiskey bottles. We built pretty churches in your honor, stained-glassed organs, the works, And when the people moved away from the riffraff, the church followed them straight out into the suburbs.
Is that? I'm sorry for the interruption. That is a powerful message. Were you listening? I like that last line about the people moving away from the riffraff and the church following them to the suburbs. I guess maybe I'm the riffraff. It's tough to judge a book by its cover. A lot of you would be surprised to know I grew up in this church. There's a pew right down over here with my family's name on it. I used to sing in the children's choir over here in choir. It's kind of cool to be home. I walked down the halls, looked at some of the classrooms where I went to Sunday school. Well, look at me now. Have you ever heard that song, "What If God Was One of Us"? Just a slob like one of us, just a stranger on the bus. It's kind of a scary thought, isn't it? How many of you have ever been downtown shopping or going to a sporting event and see a bum sitting on the corner? And your first thought is, it's just another bum. But I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere in the back of your head there's a little voice saying, "What if? What if that's Jesus? What if he's here to test me? See what I'd say. See what I'll do." It's a scary thought, isn't it? What about me? Could I be Jesus here to test you? I don't think so. But it doesn't matter what I think. It matters what you think. I want to tell you a short story and ask you a couple questions. I'm going to use this guitar to help me do that, if that's okay.
Crash took his children.
Sorry for the interruption. I'll go sit with that. Thank you.
Hopefully your point was well made. Look at all we've done for you, Jesus. Why can't you leave us alone? We've got enough troubles now. Why do you keep poking us in the conscience? What do you want? Our hearts? You know the answer, don't you? That's exactly what Jesus wants, our hearts. And women and men and even children whose lives and hearts have been taken over by Jesus Christ, who indeed is not a kitten, but a tiger, have been upsetting the world down through the ages of history. And we, and you, can be a part of it. Amen.